Perfect. All right. Yo, yo, everybody. Here we are on another episode of the Mind Body Marathon. We have on today's show, regular Dr. Matt.
Hello.
And our guest is Hunter Christopher. How do you say your name again?
Hunter Christopher.
perfect. With a short C.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with a short C. Yeah, no, this is great, actually. So Hunter is currently running for Hanson's Brooks. Just signed professionally with them.
Yep.
And is a longtime runner at Youngstown State University. And yep. Where did you go to high school?
I went to Salem.
So you actually ran for Salem?
Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
You're a Quaker.
I am a Quaker.
Yeah. I went to a district meet there last year. It's kind of a cool little stadium you guys have there.
Yeah, our track is really, really nice.
Yeah.
I think it's one of the nicest in the state.
It's pretty cool because it's like right in the middle of the city and mm-hmm. it's, you know, the buildings around it are kind of cool. I was pretty shocked.
Yeah. It's pretty modern to have like the brick wall on the outside and the yeah. nice fence. And then they just built up the opposite side, like press box and everything. So it feels like a stadium, especially with the school being there.
Yeah.
So it gives like a different feel than just like your typical high school track.
So this has always been so interesting to me. And we'll get into your pro career and we'll get into all that sort of stuff too and some of the decisions there. But why are people fast in Salem?
You think that Salem has some fast runners?
Yes. Oh. Historically, they've had tons. Like,
yeah,
Amish.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I don't know. I think.
Or even like, you know, Marlington. Like, what is it? That whole ridge of runners in that area is very interesting to me.
I think that, like, going back to Salem and when you had like Eamon and like the Shivers brothers, I think that they just got lucky and kind of found like a good group of like 5 to 7 guys
yeah.
that wanted to run. And then once you get like that little bit of culture and then, you know, the kids in the area see that like kids at Salem can be good and then, you know, it rubs off on Marlington. But you're right. Like Marlington has had like a good past couple yeah. like 4 years. And I think it just comes down to like you get a bunch of friends together and they find out that they could be half good at running and mm-hmm. then, you know, a couple more jump on board and then, you know, they really get good at it.
I always joke that it's because there's nothing else better to do in that
there
area.
There is really nothing else better to do in Salem or probably Marlington.
Yeah, probably that and a little grind mentality.
You know, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Business oriented of that area too. So
yeah,
just go out and grind yeah. hard.
Like the
hard
nothing
miles.
Better to do along with like a little blue collar,
yeah.
you know, background kind of goes a long way.
And there are just nonstop communities all around Ohio where that produces success.
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool. So you ran in high school at Salem, then you go to Youngstown. Why'd you choose Youngstown?
I chose Youngstown. I really liked the guys that I were around. And then Coach Roop and Coach Corby were really awesome
mm-hmm.
In my recruitment process. I really felt like I was wanted. And there was a history of guys improving, whether it was going from, you know, 17 minutes to 15 or,
yeah.
you know, 15, 16 minutes all the way down to 14. So, mm-hmm.
yeah, talk about culture for sure. They definitely created one there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I was lucky enough to be a part of that.
So what were your stats going in from high school?
I was a 15:59 high school cross-country runner, 9:20, 3,200, and like 4:23 in the 1,600.
That's crazy. You went 9:20 but barely got under 16.
Yeah.
That's pretty wild.
Like I ran 15:59 my last race at the state meet, and it was like 59, like, five. So it was like, you know, like just under it, like barely counts.
That kind of sounds a lot like my career, but only I didn't run anywhere near as fast in track, but I basically would run like 16:30s my mm-hmm. whole year, time from sophomore year to senior year. And then my senior year at state, I went 15:49.
Yeah.
And it was just like, where did that come from? Holy yeah. cow.
So, I mean, like, you know how it is. You're basically a 16 minute runner. You're in 15:59 and
yeah.
you do it one time. Like, mm-hmm. so yeah, but 9:20 going into COVID, so that was in the indoor my senior year.
Okay.
And then I remember I qualified for New Mouse Nationals.
Yeah.
I was so excited to go to New York City. And like that morning, like 4 a.m, they canceled it. And that was pretty upset.
Yeah.
I mean, I wanted to go to New Mouse Nationals.
That Seriously.
Was, that was a cool thing to do.
Yeah. Your first taste of like real success for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah.
Now you go to Youngstown, and at what point, because you got good quick.
I did. Yeah. A little bit.
At what point did you realize, like, man, this, I'm kind of on another level here?
I would say probably when I ran 13:50 my junior year in Boston, maybe Raleigh my sophomore year, I ran 14:19 is when yeah. I like realized I could, you know, really, really keep improving in the sport.
Now you ran 14:19 your sophomore year early in the season at Raleigh, but mm-hmm. So how did the rest of that season pan out?
It was pretty, disappointing. I went to the University of Tennessee and ran a 1500. That didn't go well. It was like raining and 40 yeah. degrees. So I remember I did my only stride to the line got there, turned around, raced, put all my stuff on and went to the bus. That's how that went.
Yeah.
And then I got injured going into conference and just got on the line and scored points. And then, you know, the season was over, and then just focused on getting healthy for the next cross country season.
Hmm. Now, so you ended up, so what is your 5K PR from college?
13:39. Jeez. Yeah. So I had a 2:20 improvement from high school cross country to track. So that's what Youngstown State can do for you if any high school kids want to go to Youngstown.
There we go.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So then you realize, so you get, you run fast at, and you ran 13:50, you said, and you realize, okay, I'm kind of next level here. Yeah. So, you know, did you guys start jumping in a little bit more competitive races? Did your race strategy change? Like, what did you guys kind of do from that junior year on?
I think I got to where I was at that point because I learned how to race. And that's something I didn't really understand in high school. Coach Root instilled that in me, just like a method or a way to race, that really worked well with me. And that was kind of running the last mile, to the last thousand really hard, where I used to run like as hard as I could from the middle out and then not be able to close as well the last half mile. And then, we started going to more competitive races. You know, we made it a staple to go to Boston in the interseason, always going to Raleigh. We got out to California during the outdoor season once. And just got a good idea of where to go. Wake Forest is where we went this past outdoor season. So just, going into competitive meets. And, you know, by that time we had 4 or 5 years to figure out training, and just you understood what to do by that point.
So you changed your race strategy a little bit. Were you running like more 1500s or 5 or 10Ks? Like, what did you end up doing kind of around that 5K?
So it was prioritize the 5,000 and then run some 1500s to kind of supplement that. Our idea was to try and get the mile down as close to 4 minutes and under, and that'll bring down the 5,000.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What did you end up doing in the 15 or the mile?
Like 3:45, but that was my sophomore year. So like 4:02 equivalent, I think, in the mile.
Okay, and then nice.
You think, you know, 2 or 3 years later, you go to run under 4 minutes, but going into indoor season, I was never like perfectly healthy. And you know how the opportunities just, you know, that you have so little opportunities. And we went out to Boston. In my opinion, that's like the worst place to run a mile because they throw 16 to 18 kids on that small track that can all run like 4 minutes to 4:02.
Yeah.
And everyone's trying to do the same thing. So you're in like lane four running, you know, the whole time. You end up running 4:02, 4:03.
And you could have probably like come close.
Yeah. Yeah. So if it's better off if you're like a 4 flat guy in a 3:56 heat and you can just get on the back.
Mm-hmm.
But so I wish my 1500 and mile were a little quicker, but those days might be behind me.
Yeah.
Transitioning to the road. So
you know, tell me about your senior year where you qualify for nationals and all that.
Okay. So senior year started off really rough. So I was in Raleigh and I remember being on I was in the last heat with some of the pros and, you know, top collegiates. And I remember looking at all of them lined up and I was on the ground getting my Achilles scraped out while everyone's on the race. So I pop up, go race. I think I ran like 13:47, not very excited about that.
Yeah.
Probably like 10 seconds slower than where I wanted to be. And then I got out to Wake Forest 2 weeks later, ran 13:46, but just raced better overall, you know, beat a lot of competitive guys.
Yeah.
Went out to Penn. I was going to run the 1500 at Penn Relays and then switched it last second. My decision to run the 5000, and Coach Roop supported that, as he always has.
What was your reasoning?
More chances. I felt like it would take under 13:45 to be in for regionals for sure. Mm-hmm. And I knew I could run, you know, 13:30s. Ended up running 13:40 on the dot, beat a lot of good guys again. Knew I was in for regionals. You know, kind of had that weight off my back.
Yeah.
And then we just did so much preparation for regionals. I'm a lot of shifting gears, just, you know, making sure that we were going to be in that race. And then got to Jacksonville and just was relieved, just like, you know, appreciative, very grateful to be there. Enjoyed being on the beach with one of my teammates and just like soaked up the whole experience.
Yeah.
And I think I got to the line in a really good place. And I think that's why things went well that day.
So tell us about that day. So what did you end up running? What place?
I ended up running. It was really hot and humid as Jacksonville is. We were going to run, I believe, like 8 o'clock. So the, you know, the sun would have went down, would have been cooler. We ended up running at 7 and got moved up. The first heat,
dude, that sucks.
Yeah, it sucks. I was
like,
in
the worst thing. You're like, move us back even more.
I mean, everyone had like an ice vest or like a towel around their neck, like just trying to stay cool. The first heat went out, and I think that was one in like 13 or it was like 14 O's or 14 teens, so like super slow.
Yeah.
So being in the second heat, you know that, you know, if you're top seven, you're gonna get in on a time qualifier.
Yep.
And the gun, I mean, I remember I was covered in like wet towels, just ice vest, understanding that we needed to have like a 7 out of 10 race equivalent. Mm-hmm. Like nothing crazy. You don't have to go out and, you know, be third or second. You just have to, you know, be top seven, have a decent race. And that's what I ended up doing. I ended up being, I think, second from last from for about 2,000 meters from 2,200 to 3K. I had the fastest half mile out of the whole field, moving up, getting myself in position. I think I moved into like seventh. And then, you know, you get to like, I made it to 4,000 and I was in seventh. And I was like, oh, guys will pass me. Like, you know, I'll falter to 12th, you know, be 15th in the region. And, you know, I'll be happy about that. You know, I'm not supposed to be here. I'm from a mid-major, you know.
Yeah.
Gary Martin was in front of me at that point. Like, he'll walk away from me. Made it to 600 left. And I was like, all right, I'm still here. You know, I was in sixth at that point. And I was like, all right. And I hit one lap to go. And one of the Butler guys stepped off right in front of me. And he was All-American in Eugene the year previous. And he stepped off, and that moved me into fifth. And I was like, oh my gosh, I just have to run like a 60. And, you know, like, and I remember.
Only a 60.
Yeah, only a 60 at that point. Coach Root was at 200 to go. And he said, one can pass you and you're going to Eugene. So I took like a look over my shoulder and no one was there. I didn't see any shadows. I was like, this can't be right. Like, there's no way. Made it to the home stretch, kicked in, and then I crossed the line and I just went crazy. I don't know if you saw videos. Gosh. My best friend, Ryan Meadows, was in the infield, and he was taking a video of me. And you can just see it in my face when I realized that I was, like, going to Eugene, and I just lost it. And it was, like, the coolest thing, you know.
Yeah.
My family was there. My mom and brother were there. My girlfriend was there. And they don't really make it out to a lot of races. My other buddy, Tyler Clark, who you know, flew out. And it was just like the fairy tale ending.
Yeah, I know. That's like chills, man. When you like, you just have that breakthrough race and, you know, we've all kind of been there and had those experiences, but that's a pretty, pretty epic one for sure.
Yeah.
And it's such a confidence builder. Where it's like, yeah, I belong here. Like I'm, you know, I'm here. Like you're doing damage on other people. You know, you're putting your footprint on the race.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. And especially to, you know, not be fighting necessarily down the home stretch to qualify.
Yeah.
You know, I was by myself. I think I was like less than, I think I was like 100, 200ths of a second away from the last big queue. So no one was like on my shoulder running down the home stretch. I kind of just got to, you know, like process that like 5 seconds ahead of time that I was going to Eugene.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was just, I don't think I'll ever forget that weekend. You know, we got to hang out in Jacksonville. I'd go do my run in the morning, have like a slow morning, hop in the ocean after for like 15 minutes and just go hang out
at
the hotel for the rest of the day.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome, man. Yeah. So walk us through the experience at Nationals.
That was a lot different. So we stayed all the way where Oregon State is.
Oh, yeah. In Corvallis.
Corvallis. We were there.
It was like an hour north or something like that.
It was an hour away. I think hotels in Eugene were around $1,000 a
night. No, it's
just like crazy.
Dude. We've been there numerous times. We know it's ridiculous.
Yeah, and then, you know, drove down, hung out in Corvallis, which was cool. It's totally different, you know, the Northwest. I've never been there compared to anywhere else in the country. And then the stadium, Eugene, was unreal. I was extremely nervous to go in the stadium. And then, you know, once you get in the atmosphere and, you know, with the warm-up track and you're there with all the jumpers and sprinters, you kind of just, like, settle in and feel at home and feel like you belong.
How much bigger did the stadium feel than any other track that you've been at?
I think that it's more of a professional stadium. So for like example, you know, even you go to like Raleigh or any of these other big collegiate meets, you kind of just hang out in the infield and you know you have to be in the corner at this time to, you know, walk out on the track. This was totally different. You had your warm-up track, which was a separate holding
totally
area.
Separated.
Then they funneled you into this like small door on the side of Hayward. They had like it all blocked off. You know, there are people like watching you go in. And then you're inside Hayward and you make a sharp turn, you walk down this ramp and you can see like everything is like this vibrant green and it's just like super modern. And, you know, you could push some of the best guys in the NCAA right in front of you. And, And then you're just all stuck in this little area. They have you sat next to each other. You know, some people are, you know, ready to race 25 minutes out. They're have their spikes on, yeah, and their jersey on. And some people are just hanging out. They look like they're about to turn on Sunday Night Football. And I was just kind of looking around, just trying to take it all in, honestly. You know, the runway was right in front of us. And I just looked around and I saw some of the biggest names in the NCAA and just kind of soaked it all in more. I knew I wasn't going to be pushing for the win.
Yeah.
Not to take anything away from myself, you know, just understanding what the situation was like. But yeah, it was just cool to see how everyone in some of the NCAA's best approach that race in that setting. You know, some have been there for, you know, that was their fourth time, and that was my first. So I just kind of got to, you know, see what that was like behind the scenes and, you know, be a part of that.
And how did you do?
I did not do very well. you know, kind of not Jacksonville was my peak, but you know, I ran my best there. And
What time did you run at Jacksonville?
I ran like 13:48, 13:49.
Huh.
Yeah. So, you know, by no means like a competitive time, or sometimes you think that you should be going to NCAAs, but, you know, on that day, you know, a lot of
with
people.
With the heat and everything. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you just kind of take what the race gives you.
Exactly.
Sort of thing.
You know, on that day, I, you know, was just better than a couple other guys that, you know, on 9 out of 10 days, they'd probably be better than me. But that's just kind of how it goes.
So then Eugene doesn't go the way you like?
No, but in that, you know, I just really enjoyed that moment. I remember being in high school and early days in college and watching that meet during the, you know, early summer and, you know, always hoping and dreaming that you're going to be there, but having a firm understanding of, you know, what it takes to get there and not how lucky you have to be, but just the odds. You know, you have to be one of 24 in the whole country, you know, one of 12 in the East, mm-hmm, to do so. So.
How far into the first lap did it take the nervous butterflies to go?
Yeah. So then my family came down, my mom, dad, brother, girlfriend, they all made it to Eugene and they got an Airbnb 3 miles from the stadium. So I hung out the night before, we went over to the Airbnb and then woke up there the next day and kind of just got ready. And I remember being like four hours out. I didn't want to race. I was so nervous. I couldn't eat. I was just like, I don't know. And then, getting to the stadium and getting on the, you know, the holding area, our little section, you can see the stadium. You're on the back side and, you know, you can hear the events going on.
It's like there's no going back, man.
Yeah. And just then, you know, once you get there, you start to feel settled in and, you know, more at home. And then I was really excited to get on the track and just see what that was like.
When you're in these like momentous races, it's also the way I kind of think of it as like a roller coaster, right?
Yeah.
If you're standing in line and you're watching the roller coaster, you kind of get nervous, get nervous. And then all of a sudden you get on it and the process starts. You know, they lock you in, you know, everything starts and you just go, you know, you're just in it. But like the buildup is so much worse than just starting the warm up, starting the routine, putting on your spikes, doing your thing. Like once you get into the routine.
Yeah, and once you're getting walked down, you're like, this is the same track. It is, you know, everybody else. Yeah. It's 400 meters.
They do make it like, the more of the experience is just super cool, you know, being like, I remember sitting there in the first holding area where they call you like 45 minutes out. And one of the officials was like, I am so honored to be like in front of you guys and watch you race. And I was like, no one's ever said this before.
That's pretty cool.
Like, and just that kind of like set the tone and, you know, then they funnel us in and like you said, like being the nerd.
And are you nervous outside of the stadium at that point?
No, they're under.
That was on the outside. So that was the first holding area.
Okay.
So I don't know what relative like direction wise.
Oh, wait, no, that's right. Because you're in the tent. Yeah.
And we're in the first tent. And then they say, all right, like you're being ushered in the stadium. And then, you know, everyone picks up their bag and they put you then into the stadium. You're underneath. And then everyone has their own chair and like a bag or a bin that you set your stuff in. And at that point, I was nervous. I remember watching like Brian Masao doing strides, who ended up running under 13 minutes. And but I remember that was the only race in Eugene that I'd never wanted it to end. I could have kept running laps forever. You know, normally you get
that's pretty cool way of saying it.
Yeah, you get late into the race, and you know you're in a good spot, and you're like, all right, it just needs to end now. Like if ended now, it'd be a good spot. I remember. I mean, I was so far back. I remember watching the race finish, but I didn't want it to end. I could have kept running laps.
That's pretty cool.
So.
Yeah, it's going back kind of to the routine side of it. It's like, I think one of the most important things about moving forward in your career is making that routine, you know, of like, you know, like I said, once you start the warm up and then you start the putting on the spikes and just kind of the ritual, ritual of it. It's like you take that and you extend it out through the morning of, through the evening before, And then all of a sudden everything just becomes very standardized. So you don't have to really worry about it all.
Yeah.
Because you're going to, you know, you're pro now, dude. You're going to get in some big ones, some big races, and it's going to be just as exciting. I mean, NCAA Nationals is obviously one of the best track meets in the world.
Yeah.
But you know, it's you got some other big ones coming up, and I think that's going to be kind of a fun experience for you to sort of like lock that procedure down, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Speaking of, I was just at the TC10, and our pro, we all stayed in the same hotel. All the pros stayed in this hotel, right? In St. Paul on the riverfront, and our buses left at 5 a.m. So you know, we're all hanging out in this area, in the lobby, and they usher you with the buses. And I was walking off the bus, and it was me, and I was closer to Joe Klecker than we were right now, just walking like through Minneapolis at like 5:30 a.m. I was like, yeah, this is probably the most I'm gonna see of Joe today. He'll be way ahead. But just guys, you know, you see on, you know, social media, and you know, he was an Olympian and, you know, representing the United States, and they're very human. So it's cool to see that side of it, you know, relative to someone who, you know, may only see that side of social media. So
So walk me through from NCAA Nationals through deciding to go to Hanson's, Brooks.
Okay, so I was speaking to Hanson's before I made NCAAs, and then obviously things started to really fall in place for me when I made NCAAs. And there were some other opportunities on the horizon that I was kind of seeing what that looked like. Made NCAAs. Kevin was down in Jacksonville when I made it, so I got to talk to him.
He's one of the nicest guys ever.
Yeah, he's, everyone knows him in the running world. You know, you go anywhere and someone knows Kevin.
Yeah. So I had considered running for them. This would have been 2006. I think I was talking with him. Mm-hmm. Never did an official visit, but just talked on the phone.
Yeah.
And decided obviously not to go. And then so fast forward like 10 years later, like to this day, Kevin will come up to me and be like, hey, Leo, how are you doing? Like, he remembers me from that experience.
He remembers everyone.
It's crazy.
The amount of people that are, like, impressed or will talk to us and know his athletes and just, you know, praise Kevin and tell us how much they like him. He always, if he goes to a meet, he's bringing, you know, Brooks shoes for them, a bag or a hat. Mm-hmm. Like, just one of the, you know, best guys. And that's why I really liked Hanson's, because he reminded me of Coach Gorby and Coach Roop. I just had such a good relationship with them, and that's why I was successful at Youngstown State. And I believe that, you know, if I could kind of find something similar with that, with Kevin, that, I would, you know, be successful. So then
you just kind of started that process, and you kind of fell in love with, like, you know, the family atmosphere that they have. And
I did my visit before Jackson. No, did my visit before NCAAs.
After Jacksonville?
Yeah, after Jacksonville. It was pretty close to NCAAs. So I was up in Rochester and then came back and then flew out. Enjoyed it. I got to run with some of the guys, you know, just see so many dirt roads up in Rochester. Just a really cool place to train. And then ran NCAAs, met with Kevin out there. I think I got a call from him the following Tuesday, you know, saying like, hey, we love to have you if, you know, this is something you want to do. And I think it took me like 5 whole minutes to think about it. And then I called him right back and said, absolutely. Like, I'd love to join.
Check all my other options real quick.
Yeah. By that point, I knew that, you know, that's where I wanted to be and stuff. And, you know, as long as like the Hansons do so much for you as well as Brooks, they really take care of us as well. Mm-hmm. So that's like almost the perfect partnership. I knew I wanted to transition to the roads, and that's kind of where I was going to be doing the longer stuff, especially talking to you, you know, whenever I would come get treatment and stuff. So yeah, that just kind of fell into place.
Now what's so we were talking a little bit before the podcast, you were talking about kind of gearing up for Houston half.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So, you know, walk me through that process and what you were thinking about there.
All right. So I got to Rochester in early August, ran the Northport 10K and then the TC 10 just to get experience and kind of see what like the...
Now, how did you do there? At those two races?
I did all right. My lack of experience showed through in Northport.
Were they U.S. championships?
They were previously. So the 10K in Northport used to be the U.S. 10K championships for the road. But there was a, I don't want to say problem or issue, but the...
They migrate around, honestly.
The draw with Northport is you have host families. It's in Northport. So they have these host families. You stay in these beautiful houses. The families are awesome. They just, you know, show you the town. It's just like a very unique part of the race. And the race director loves that. And I think USATF wanted to get away from that. And they said that, you know, if you want this to be a US championship, like, we can't have the host families. You have to stay in a hotel.
Well, I know, because it was 10K, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know two of the years that I lived in Atlanta, Petrie was the US 10K champ. So yeah. I know it migrates around, but that's really interesting. And I've not heard of that, about the backstory about that race.
Yeah, and they wanted to keep the host families. And even the winner was up on the stage in front of everyone and praised how much he likes the host families. And personally, I loved my host family. I thought it was so much fun.
That's pretty cool.
And that's kind of why I want to go back, because of that reason.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the prize purse was really good. The competition was good. It was
what place did you get there?
I was 12th, but I was like 7th early on.
Okay.
Running about 4 or 5 miles. And then more experienced guys like Jacob Thompson and, you know, some guys who've mm-hmm. been on the scene for a while just kind of ate me up that last mile and a half. So that's why I kind of say my inexperience really showed through.
Well, I don't know. Sure, inexperience, but like, it's a longer distance. Yeah, I mean, like, yeah. The thing about the 10K that's crazy, and you'll obviously figure this out quickly, is that you can go through pretty quick in the 5K
mm-hmm.
and almost darn near like a 4 mile PR and yeah. hold it. It's wild. The 10K, it's just like, if you're not afraid to kind of stick your neck out kind of in that middle part of the race,
because
mm-hmm. you're going to get to that mile and a half mark, you know, like, or so a mile left, and you're going to be able to hold it. But it's wild. Like, whenever I would run, like, because one of the years I ran Peachtree, I was able to get, I think I was 12th or 13th at Peachtree.
Mm-hmm.
I think this would have been 2011. No, 2010. And it's a hilly race and it's hot. It's on July 4th. And I remember, like, I went through the 5K and I didn't even want to hear the split. I don't want to know it because it's going to freak me out. Yeah. And I look back and it was like really freaking fast, like close to my PR. And luckily I didn't know it because it would have like psyched me out quite a bit.
Yeah.
But you just like hold on and go, you know?
Yeah. And the roads are different. I mean, you know, you have the elevation change in cross country, but when you're sprinting downhill at like 4:30 pace on the roads,
and there's such weird road strength.
Quad. Yeah. It's just so different.
Well,
like, you can't really convert it from like the track over and even cross. I mean, it's very hard to bounce back and forth between the roads and track. And, you know, I feel like very few people can do it. Bia Simbasa, he's on the pro scene. Like, he's someone who can do it very well. Connor Mann's obviously.
Well, that's obviously why, that's part of the reason why I encouraged you to tinker with the farther distances. I felt like you had like a really good frame for the road.
Mm-hmm.
Very durable, very compact. And you're dead right. Like, it does beat you up quite a bit more. Like, my brother-in-law just ran his first road marathon with me in Germany this past weekend. And in the summer, he ran the Burning River Marathon, which it took him about 6 hours to do. But then he ran 3:40 in Cologne. And he was like, dude, it was twice as hard. It's just because the roads beat you up so much more. It's like, yeah, you think like 6 hours on the trail is harder than 3 hours in the road. No, it's not. And like, 3 hours on the road beat you up like crazy.
Yeah. And we have a 6 mile loop that we do workouts on, Stony Creek Metro Park. So, you know, you're always working out on that surface. It's like extremely, I mean, it's like a bike path.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little harder. But then, you know, the other days we spend on these like beautiful dirt roads. And you get like a lot of soft surface, which is really nice. Like the Paint Creek Trail. But yeah, I remember finishing the 10K and I went back to, they had this little section where we had like our pro bags and stuff.
Yeah.
And I stepped off of this ledge. And I just put like my right foot down and my quad just like gave out. And it was just like a totally different like feeling than, you know, racing on the track and even cross country. And I raced at the Silver Park over in Akron.
Yeah. Silver Creek.
Silver
Creek. Regionals.
And, you know, that has a lot of elevation change and that just, you know, just not even a similar feeling compared to the roads.
Correct.
To cross country.
I'm excited for you to kind of really get into a lot of these road races, like even some of the legendary ones like Boston or, you know, even like Bix or something like that, you know, some other common, or even Peachtree, you know, these races, and you hear about the courses and the hills and the challenges and you're like, oh my gosh, it's crazy how fast some people can run on these crazy courses.
Yeah. That's what's exciting or very enticing about the road scene, you know, is also you have your big ones, you know, if you have a 10K, you want to hit well, you want to have a half marathon and a marathon, but then to go out and, you don't run like a 7 mile in Iowa. Like, you don't get to do that in track or even cross country. Yeah. You know, it's either like the same distance. The road scene offers a lot of, you know, variation. Like, there was a 4 mile championships in Illinois. Like, when are you ever going to run a 4 mile, like on any other, you know, kind of circuit?
Yeah. Even like Falmouth or Beach to Beacon.
Yeah.
Or
stuff like that. Just there's
a lot of history,
a lot of variety in history, within the road scene. So you can kind of play around and, every year looks a little different. You know, you could go, I know Boston and New York and Chicago are all different times, but, you know, you can spend a couple of your career and, you know, maybe hit Boston twice or
yeah,
you know, something that you're maybe not doing every single year.
That's one thing I really was sad about my career is that I was nowhere near the level you're at now, but I'm bummed I never did Boston when I was good,
mm-hmm.
you know, like an elite level. Like it would have been so cool to run like, you know, sub 220 at Boston or something like that. Just yeah. But I kind of like the way I was sort of thinking of it back then. It's like, I'm going to go there and not make any money. Mm-hmm. Whereas if I can go to like a smaller marathon, I can make some money
yeah.
at that same time. But it's like the street cred of saying that you can finish under the top 20 at Boston or something yeah. like that is crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. That's something I think that even people are in. What's interesting is getting to know a lot of the pros on the scene, you know, before the TC10, they just stick us in this giant like press conference mm-hmm. room. You know, everyone just sitting there looking at each other, warming up and doing their thing. And you get to chat with people and just, you know of people on the scene. And a lot of people, I believe the world list to for whoever qualifies for the United States, it's on like a mm-hmm. descending order list. And a lot of people, I think, chose Chicago and New York over, you know, representing on the world stage in Tokyo. That
yeah.
might be because of like, you know, appearance fees or the prize purse. You know, I don't think you get appearance fees for worlds or a prize.
Correct. Purse.
But if you go out to New York City and they'll give you $5,000 to show up and then you could make money off racing like that.
That's, I mean, imagine being the average Kenyan. I mean, yeah. if you're going to get Kenyans running in worlds, like these are people that are running based on like sponsorship stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And because you're right, because they're not going to get appearance fees and their yeah. country's not really going to pay them in the same way that like a Berlin or New York is going to pay them.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just a markedly different experience for a lot of people at that level. But it's interesting to point that out. I have noticed that more in the U.S. scene as well. Like our long, long distance, like road races are definitely like the marathon side of it is not getting quite the numbers like we would think because of that reason.
Yeah. And that's also like a disappointing thing to hear is someone who you're just, you know, I'm now starting to understand that is like that kind of money talks.
Yeah.
You know, back in high school, you know, you'd think like, why would someone from the United States pass up on a world team? You know, that doesn't make sense. Like you get to represent your country, but if you can go make $10,000 instead of do that, like,
yeah,
that
goes. But if you think about it too, like the marathon numbers are crazy right now. Like almost 1 million people applied to London this year and like 500,000 to New York. Like there's so much money mm-hmm. in these marathons and they can easily just dump out a couple thousand to the average kind of elite runner to get them to just like bolster that field
yeah.
because you know, it's a rat race for these races to like get the world record and, you know, get these like future like world champions and, you know, things like that, just because it's, you know, it's a competitive scene to kind of yeah. just lock up these majors and stuff like that. So it's, you're right. It is a little sad to see, but you know, 100% accurate money talks, man.
Yeah. And you can't knock anyone for either way, whichever they decide, you
yeah.
know, everyone has their own, you know, personal life and, you know, maybe. Yeah, you just never know what situation someone's in and stuff. So
I think the scene, even when we look back to like when, you know, Salazar was in his game and you had a lot of the elite marathoners in that world. And even when like Dina Castor and all them are running well and like, you know, some of the other, like some of the Hansen, like Brian Sell and all those yeah. guys, like I think though that era, it's markedly different now because of the number we are in the biggest running boom ever.
Yeah.
And the money on the roads is just out of control.
Mm-hmm.
Relative to the interest at the, you know, international scene for like the world champs in the Olympics. It's like, there's still some of an interest there, but like not anywhere near the amount of money that's on the roads.
Yeah. And even if you like being in the United States, you know, everyone knows Boston. If you were to tell someone, yeah, I ran at the world marathon, they'd be like, okay, they
yeah.
wouldn't know where that was or probably understand.
That's
but
a good
if you
point.
Told someone, you know, I ran the Boston marathon, they'd be like, oh my gosh, like tell me about that. And that, you know, there's just like such a big history in Boston. I feel like even New York now is starting to draw more of a crowd.
So it's interesting. So when I talk to people, so I'm part of some decent running groups, like in terms of like under like knowing people in running groups in Brazil and Spain and now Luxembourg and France. A lot of internationals do not have any interest to run Boston. They have more interest in running New York because it's easier for internationals to get into New York, which is weird. It's harder for Americans to get in. It's a very odd thing where, as if you, basically they want to make it a very international race. So a lot of internationals do want to run New York, but their biggest interest overseas for us is Chicago by far.
Really?
Yeah, they want to come to Chicago and run fast. So they don't talk as much about Boston, getting into Boston. They don't talk as much, a little less about, or a little bit more about New York, but it's basically Chicago.
Huh. I thought it would have been New York and Boston, you know, with the history.
Yeah, I think that perennially the statistics come out saying that New York or London is the best race in the world. Just when you take in like atmosphere and, you know, experience and all that. So New York is definitely very appealing, and they do put a heavy emphasis on internationals for sure.
Mm-hmm.
London is interesting because I don't even know what the number is, but I feel like it's got to be like 2/3 of the race has to be British people. So it's actually really hard as an international to get in. For somebody like you, to be able to get in, but like, you know,
your average Joe
is going to struggle. London is very difficult to get in. Tokyo is sort of the same because they do want a lot of Japanese people running that race. So it's kind of interesting how each race has set up the way they're going to allow for internationals and nationals to get in.
Is Chicago the fastest major? Is that why a lot of people come over?
Well, Chicago has both world records right now. So it's currently considered the fastest, yeah.
Okay.
Berlin, historically, people would say that Berlin is probably technically a faster course because of the way the buildings are designed. It kind of creates
crosswind.
Yeah, you don't get crosswind. You get a trough because the buildings are connected.
Okay.
Whereas in Chicago, as we know in our cities in the U.S., we don't connect buildings. So like you get those crosswinds. And so, but it has had the last couple of world records. So it's technically the fastest right now. If you're looking at average finishing time, it's actually Valencia is actually the fastest in the world. And then it's Berlin. And then Chicago, I think, would be three there. So I think Berlin and Valencia kind of go back and forth on average finishing times in terms of like percent of PRs and things like that. But Chicago currently has a world record. So it's interesting. It's kind of, I mean, they're all kind of the same. I just ran Cologne. Cologne felt very similar to Chicago. I mean, you could put together an elite race and get somebody to run super fast in Cologne, just like you could in Valencia.
We have some guys running Chicago, Valencia, and we have Afewerki Zuru going to Chicago, which is in what, 4 days?
Yeah, this weekend. Yeah.
And then we have Shwaib Al-Jabali doing the Valencia half marathon in October, and then Zach Pannon is doing the Valencia full.
Dude, Valencia is sick.
So it was cool to see, you know, some of my teammates who, you know, Shwaib's relatively new, but, you know, Zach's been on the scene for so long, as well as Afewerki, who just joined the team like a couple weeks before me.
Yeah.
So it's cool to just learn from so many of these guys that have been on the pro scene, and, you know, someone like Zach, who's, you know, really almost a household name now for Brooks, and just like, you know, the American marathoning scene. It's cool to see how he operates day to day, as well as some of these other guys. And that also gives me hope that I can, you know, really, you know, establish myself on the road scene, just seeing how some of these guys have, you know, carried themselves.
You know, just keep plugging away, man. Just keep one day at a time, and just, you know, don't expect this big pop. And, you know, if you just play through the routine of things and just paying attention to the basics, then your time will come for sure.
It just feels like starting over, you know, going from, you know, high school, and obviously in college, you know, that you have to restart. But now you would think that a little would transition over from college to the pro scene. And it did not feel that way at all. It literally felt like just a whole restart again. And that's also a good thing, you know, a new chapter, but you do realize now it's like, wow, this is going to take, you know, some time. And it's hard being like a 23-year-old. And then you look at, you know, the list of who you're competing against, and it's like 30 or 32.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. Just keep plugging away, because
it's going to take a lot of time.
When you get onto the road, that old man's strength plays a role, dude.
Yeah.
So you get like 26, 27, like, kind of mid to late 20s, like, you're going to be light years ahead of where you're at right now, like experience and intuition. And here's the other thing too, like, I'm so excited. So I ran all of my track PRs the season after I ran my first marathon. So I ran my first marathon right after I graduated. And you just don't know how much tougher you can be until after you do this. Like, think of the 10K you just ran.
Yeah.
Right. Just think of like doing a marathon like that and just not even be able to walk for like 3 days. Like, then you can just dig so much deeper in the 5K. You can just dig so much deeper in the 10K on the roads and things like that. Like, so you're just going to get this experience of pain and how to deal with it and just different levels of it that you just got to keep checking the boxes and kind of slowly working your way up. I'm not wishing you into the marathon early, but I am saying, like, even that half that you're going to run, you know, this coming winter in Houston is going to, it's going to be a huge jump for you. I think you're going to come off that and just be so much stronger on the track and just know that you can hurt in a different kind of way.
Yeah. I'm excited
for a much longer time.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
I'm excited to try something new and hopefully pivot from there, depending on how that goes and see, you know, what that looks like. But
do you have an interest in running a marathon?
I do. Yeah. Hopefully not too soon, you know. Hopefully,
I don't think, you want to hold off on that one.
Maybe like 2027. You know, the trials, you know, I think it's a run under 63 minutes for the half, and then that gets you in for the trials. But, you know, if the half goes well and, you know, we try out track season in spring and run a good 10K, you know, it could be, you know, do I do the marathon or 10K? Hopefully that's the issue in 2028, not just... run the marathon.
That'd be fun if you could like double trials, you know.
That would be cool.
Do marathon trials, track trials. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Because they're separated enough.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That would be cool. Yeah. Who knows?
For sure doable, because you could qualify to the marathon trials in like, you know, a season before, like even a year before. And then, you know, like depending on if you do the marathon or not, like you could just drop out or whatever. But like, but even like obviously going back to Eugene and getting on the track again,
that would be cool. It'd be cool to go back to Eugene and
in the trials is like what you experienced on steroids.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, as a professional, that'd be really cool. So that's also like another bucket list thing. It's also, you know, hit like Houston half. That I feel like that's a staple now for most pros in the United States is a half. But you know, obviously, I want to do New York. New York is what really excites me, and then obviously Boston.
Dude, I'm doing New York in a couple weeks.
That'd be exciting. Yeah, that's gonna be so cool.
Yeah, I'm pumped. It's cool because when you think about it, like you hear it's like there's like 2 million spectators on New York. It's like crazy the amount of people that just watch you over the course of that race.
Yeah. And the amount of people that are already in the city just, you know, doing day-to-day things. I'm sure that just feels, that has to be one of the best atmospheres.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I'm so super pumped. So we're kind of coming up on rounding third here on the episode. Is there any kind of, you know, final little tidbits you want to give to anybody listening that might be a young and up-and-coming runner or somebody who's maybe a little bit more experienced runner, just some insight from Hunter.
Some insight. I think what has made me successful, and whether you're in college, in high school, or, you know, a post-collegiate, and you're just looking to, you know, whether it be, you know, run competitive or just every day. And what, even something that we talked about is just finding a situation that works for you and that, you know, you're comfortable in, that you believe that you can, you know, thrive. And so what that looked like for me was being wanted and just forming relationships. And that really took me a long way. And then also just, you know, putting yourself in an atmosphere that you want to be, you know, you want to compete and be successful in. Yeah, that's just kind of...
That's huge, man. I think like every runner sort of needs to embrace their training environment and embrace, you know, their routes and their ritual and just their routines and kind of make it their own. And I think the runners that do that and love what they're doing with that experience and kind of make it their identity, those are the ones that really enjoy training.
Yeah.
And if you enjoy training, there's nothing but upside.
Yeah. I'm sure everyone's heard this 1,000 times, but like focus, be more process oriented instead of outcome oriented. You know, as easy as it is to say that and hard as it is to do, I think that's extremely important. Is to kind of focus on more of the journey, and then you'll get, you know, to the end goal. And not to circle back, but I was someone who never really thought I could, you know, run at Hayward Field in the NCAA championships. But I was, you know, focused on just getting better every single day, whether, you know, that was, you know, running easier and easier so then I can recover from my workout and then run that better so then I can be better in a week. You know, just extremely process oriented throughout my 5 years, and then I kind of got the reins towards the last bit of my career to kind of, you know, really find what worked for me. And you know, I just kind of took off. So just finding what works for you, and you know, just put some really good people in your corner that you enjoy being around.
Yeah, dude, just keep working on your mind and keep working on believing that you belong where you're at.
Yeah,
and that you're just as good and just as relevant as all the people you're running against, and the nothing but upside for you.
What's something that you would give like fellow collegiate runners that may not be in your position where they're now being sponsored by a professional company to get them into road racing shortly after college? Because we've just seen like over the years, like, you know, back in the early 2000 teens, we had a huge, you know, community group of, post-collegiate athletes running, and those numbers just continually kind of seem to dwindle. Like, what would you say is like something for them to be mindful of, like their junior, senior year, of just trying to keep them motivated to stay with their, you know, harshness of competitive running,
you know,
post-collegiate
without quitting, right?
Yeah. I think that, so the opportunities on the roads are very vast, and the pro fields are pretty big. And I feel like I thought in college that you needed a brand sponsorship and you needed like a group in order to run on the pro scene. And a lot of these races will actually fly you out. Like if you're, you know, competitive enough, they'll fly you out. They'll pay for your hotel, you know, travel, you know, per diems on them. So there are plenty of opportunities on the roads to keep going if you want to do that. And I encourage people to do that. You don't need a brand sponsorship, a shoe deal in order to do that. And there
Just go right to the race directors. Yeah,
and just because you do have that doesn't mean that just automatically, you know, guarantees that you're going to be better than someone else. You know, it's a very blue collar scene and you have to kind of make it happen for yourselves. And there are even some people that I beat in Minnesota that, you know, they were 60 minute half guys, just extreme, like way better than me, just, you know, extreme, like a lot of experience and a lot of accolades that, you know, sometimes people just, it's not their day.
Yes, exactly. That's my point. Like, that's the thing is like, don't get so hung up on what is the outcome. Just go race, have fun with it, you know, experience it. And it's like, some days you're going to run better than others. It's just that simple. And like, everybody's freaking human. And when you get into these elite scenes and you realize that, like, they're just human as well.
Yeah.
It helps disarm you a little bit from some of your fears.
And someone who, I mean, that was a good question. Look at like someone like Mark Shannon, who, you know, I respect him so much. He just ran 357. He's, I don't know how many years out of Alabama, maybe two, who showed up at the Guardian Mile and, you know, beat a lot of pros that were sponsored by, like, you know, whether it's Nike, Puma, you know, Under Armour,
just
whatever.
Straight grinder.
We'll go out to Boston whenever he can and race. And he's someone that I can confidently speak and say that he probably won't regret that, you know, looking back when he's 35, that he went out and did that. And even if, you know, you don't want to do it long-term, just go out and try it, you know?
Yeah.
There are races that'll fly you out and you can race some guys and just, you know, keep that competitive nature and spirit alive. That's something that, you know, Coach Roop always instilled in me. And I'd like to think that if I wasn't running for Hanson's or the Brooks, that, you know, maybe I would, you know, hopefully I would keep doing that. It does make it harder. You know, I won't lie to not have like Brooks and the Hansons behind you, but even someone like Tyler Clark, who's one of my best friends, he'll get up at 5:30 in the morning, get his miles in.
Dude, you know, he just ran great at Akron.
He got second, and you know, he'll come back after work and run again, and he's loving it. He's someone that, you know, you envy almost how much he
looks like a completely different runner right now. Yeah, it's pretty awesome to see his trajectory
because he's loving it.
Yeah,
and he's someone that he loves, like, you know, the shoes and gear, like he's just fully immersed. And, you know, those are often the people that do the most.
Yeah.
Do the best.
Awesome. Well, this was a great episode. Thank you so much for kind of making your way into the studio. And so pumped to kind of see your next phase of your career. And, you know, obviously very excited for you and congrats again on going pro and all your successes. So thanks again for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And then thank you.
Thanks everybody for listening. Another great episode of the Mind Body Marathon. Dr. Leo here. Be sure to check out my new book, Faster Without Fail, Your Guide to Overcoming Injuries and Running Faster Than Ever. It is now available on Amazon. You could read reviews on the Amazon. You can check out what other people have said about it. But basically, if you want to revolutionize your running form and better understand how to stay injury-free within the sport, this is your guide. Feel free to reach out and let us know what you think of the book. I would love to hear your feedback, but again, please check it out on Amazon. Faster Without Fail. Appreciate it. Dr. Leo here. If you want to catch me in another setting, be sure to check out my YouTube page, Running Rehab, where you will find exercises on how to stay healthy with running, how to improve your running form, and a bunch of other tips and tricks on how to get over common injuries.